And welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic is before you accept the job offer, yes, there is going to be a time when you will receive a job offer, and hopefully the offer will be that special job you've worked very hard to get. But before you accept it, let's be sure that there are no negative surprises that are going to pop up in the first month or two when you begin. To help me discuss this topic, I am joined by a special guest co-host, Peter DePauli, out of Sherwood, Oregon. Peter is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. You can see Peter's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, Peter.
Good afternoon, John. How are you doing today?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, it's good to be with you, too.
Peter has been counseling individuals in career advancement and job search since 1980. That's over 33 years. He lives in Sherwood, Oregon, and has acquired two master's degrees, the most recent, a master's in counseling. In addition to coaching individuals with their career resume and job hunt, he has been an outplacement and assessment consultant to large and small business firms, government agencies, and nonprofit organizations. Peter is an instructor for many local colleges and universities in career advancement and also an instructor in counseling. Now, today, for the first 30 minutes of our show, Peter and I will talk about our topic, before you accept your job offer. And then we'll take a short break and begin answering your job hunting questions, which we receive for the Job Seeker broadcast. So, Peter, let's launch right in and talk about what to do after a person receives an offer. And certainly, receiving that offer has got to be a moment for congratulation and celebration. But there's still a couple more steps. It's almost like you finally got the keys to the car, and you just can't wait to turn on the ignition and just take off down the driveway. Wait a minute. A couple things you need to know that about this car and the dashboard and all the features so that you can have a safe ride. So let me define why this topic is so important, and why when you get the offer, before you accept the offer, will be the one and only chance in your employment where you can make some slight adjustments that really might totally transform the job and make it much more fulfilling and perhaps even financially rewarded. So what we're talking about today is that moment when an employer offers you a position. Hopefully that offer is in writing, and what you should be receiving is a description of the position, certainly the job title. You should be receiving some written documentation of your compensation and your benefits, health and medical benefits, vacation, medical leave, any compensations you might have for, or reimbursements you might have for attending professional conferences and workshops, if you use your vehicle for any required trips, how you will be reimbursed for that, and so forth. And then a small item, but something that is often neglected, and that is, what if things don't quite work out? What is the organization's severance policy? Severance meaning transitioning you out. If things don't quite work out, do they have a policy? Hopefully the policy means that you will be awarded some kind of job transition coaching. But this is the only time you can ask for that. It also is the only time that you can ask about the compensation package should that be something that doesn't meet your expectations? And we're going to talk in today's broadcast how to delicately discuss areas of the position that don't quite meet your expectations. And also, if there are some things related to the job duties that you had not expected or perhaps are not really wanting to add to your list of things to do, we'll talk about how to adjust those. And then one important but final note, how do you know that the manager or executive who oversees your position is a safe person, is a good person to work for, has a balanced composure, doesn't throw fits and tantrums, doesn't threaten, is a clear and fair communicator, and on and on. How do you know that? Well, you don't. And so it is something you must know, and we'll talk today about how to, in a very delicate and professional way, clear the air so that you know if this is a reasonable place of work and if your boss is a reasonable and professional type of employer. Now, Peter, you and I have prepared to discuss this. Have I left anything out as you and I talked about the topic that really is important at this very key time between when the offer is made and when the candidate accepts the offer?
Well, John, I think you covered most of it. To me, it's not unlike I have a friend whose wife passed away a couple years ago, and he's entered into the dating scene via some of these dating sites. And, you know, the tendency is to jump at all these people that want to talk to you and get in touch with you. And yet here, somebody makes an offer, and you have to decide, are you going to meet? And it's the same thing here. This person now has an offer, and they have to nail some of these areas down before they say yes. And I think a lot of times, especially in the job market the way it is now, oh, my goodness, somebody wants me. I'll take the first thing that comes my way, and it may not be the best.
Yeah, and if there's something there that bothers you, that thing that bothers you isn't going to go away. It's going to stick under your craw, and it could even become a burr under the saddle sort of thing. So the more miles you're in the saddle, the more pain and agony that you experience. So let's put the sequence together on what's involved with receiving, discussing, and finalizing offers. So let's start tracking. Day one, the offer is made, and what we're suggesting to you, the listener, as you anticipate an offer, that when you receive the offer, you say thank you, and you say something to the extent of, I really appreciate, I really like this organization, and if you are not handed a written document or emailed a document, you should ask if you are to receive that in a polite way. And if that is not the tradition of the organization, then offer to write it up yourself. Say, you know, it's helpful sometimes to put things in writing. For me, I tend to forget things. Would it be all right if I wrote up what I heard you say, and just to make sure that we're both understanding each other? And could we meet in a week to discuss this? I know that we have spent most of this time trying to get to know me and my skills. I really haven't had as lengthy opportunity to get to know you and your organization, and if I could do some more research in the next week, that certainly would be helpful. And could we meet next Thursday to discuss the offer? So you have now delayed your response by 1 week, and once that is resolved, then the next thing you ask for is the name of someone that reports to the same boss, someone in the same department, somebody that you're going to work with, and that you would like to talk to that individual to better understand the company and the culture. Now, your plan is to go meet with that person and talk about all the positive things that you're looking forward to and so on, and then say, you know, you and I are going to be working for the same employer, same boss. Could you list for me some of the highlights of Pat's management strengths? You can kind of see where this is going. And so the person listens, and then you say, are there some things that frustrate you about Pat's management style? And that's where you're going to get the negatives. Now, legally, there's nothing you can do about the negatives. However, should any of these negatives be serious, when you talk again to the employer about the position, you can say, in your research, you have discovered this and this, and you have discovered that on occasion there is this issue that comes up, or this behavioral pattern or whatever, and you were wondering if that's going to be a problem between you and that employer. You're almost in a way saying, I'm accepting this position on the condition that you, Mr. Employer, will behave yourself when it comes to me. Employers can choose to treat you different if they want. There is no legal precedent on this, but it's an attempt. If you really, really like the job, but your future boss, there's something that he or she does that is not commendable, this is your attempt to try to soften that up a bit. Now, at the time that you are scheduling the future meeting, that's about the discussion that you're going to have, you're done, and you already know whether the compensation or the benefits or the job duties that are offered to you really match your expectations. And there is probably going to be something that bothers you. Now is not the time to bring it up. And so what you want to do is you've agreed to meet in a week. You call that employer a few days later prior to the meeting. You talk about all the positive things, and then you bring up this thing that is a concern for you, not the manager's style, but more the compensation or the fact you wanted 3 weeks vacation instead of two, whatever that is. And then all you do is say, is there flexibility? Is there some flexibility in this? And maybe we can talk about that in our future meeting. And that gives the employer some time to, if the employer has to go back and talk to somebody else or think about it, to make that adjustment. And really, that's sort of the context of the negotiating process. Now, Peter, let's just hold it right there. I've been just rattling off here. Let's you and I discuss this whole scenario of the meeting when the offer is made and what to do with all that information, and then the phone call in between, and then that final meeting. We'll talk about that final meeting later. And looks like we're going to have to take a break and get back. So stay tuned.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan, we do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give meaning and purpose to their life.
So, John, what about boomers, those who are approaching retirement age? There are a lot of us out there.
That's right, Evan, many millions. We provide very specific help to boomers and their families.
You mean that the choice what to do after retirement is just as important as selecting one's career at 20 years of age?
Well, Evan, think on this. Let's say you've been grinding it out, just waiting for that 25-year goal pin. And now, that's where you are. Does that mean your life of significance and purpose ends? You have heard that the new 65 is the old 45. A person still has 10, 15, maybe 20 more productive years ahead of them.
Well, I never thought of it that way.
Well, we help adults, many adults, find that ideal post-retirement career. For once, they don't have to be trapped into their occupation. They can be free to choose to give it back to make a difference.
But John, why couldn't a mid-30s person choose to do that?
Well, they most certainly can, and I hope they will. But some of us have been so close to the grindstone of work that we have never considered looking into the future of making a difference or giving back.
Okay, John, I want to discuss this further, that is, considering a purpose for what we do beyond a paycheck and benefits. Can we talk some more about this during the next break?
Sure, you bet.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we're back to our broadcast today. Our topic is before you accept the job offer. And we're going over some very, very important steps of what to do if that offer isn't exactly what you expected, and also encouraging you to look under the rug and into the closet just in case there might be some disappointments in this job that you've been working so hard to get. My co-host today for our broadcast is career advancement expert Peter DePauli from Sherwood, Oregon. And Peter is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see Peter's picture and bio on our website. Just click on preferred counselors. Now, Peter, just before the break, I was going through a long litany of suggestions on the process of when an offer is made, what are the steps involved, and recommending that the candidate postpone for a week that final meeting accept the offer. I'm sure I forgot some things or didn't say things as clearly as I could, so here's your chance to make me look good here.
Well, I think, you know, we talked about before the program typical issues to clarify once you get in there, which is the job duties, compensation, benefits, and a 90-day trial period. But, you know, I think I was sharing with you about I have two clients. One's for a public job offer, and the other one's a private job offer, and how it was very different. But still, the public job offer, this person needed to talk to somebody inside the organization about in this case, it was the dean who she would be reporting to, just to get some kind of an idea of what social style she is, and also some of the technical issues of how they're posting grades, all those kind of things inside the organization, because you don't want to go in there and they ask you a question, you go, what's that? And then you got the private job vacancy that's more been negotiated with somebody over 2, 3, 4 meetings, and clarifying how that person sees you in the job offer and getting them to the point where you're going back and forth and, you know, doing your research and making sure your compensation range and package is what you're expecting. So.
Yes, and you and I understand the nomenclature of the private and public job vacancies. Let's just clarify for the audience that
okay.
A public job vacancy means it's publicly known because it's posted
right.
On a website somewhere. A private job vacancy is more a hidden job that is an opportunity that has not yet been formalized and posted. And as we said on many broadcasts, 80% of positions are filled before they ever get formally posted.
Mm-hmm.
And so the process of finding an opportunity, and I know, Peter, because you and I have talked about, both of us have a client right now. Each of us have a client that is right in that process right now. And there's a fair amount of negotiating because you see an opportunity, but the employer hasn't said, I'm planning to hire, but they need to hire.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's delicately walking through those steps. But the point is, here's the candidate, and the candidate has given his or her all to look good, to meet the qualifications, to answer the tough questions. They've met with the panel. They've met with the final, maybe met with the regional manager or the vice president or the president, and finally the day arrives when the offer is made.
Right.
But wait a minute, there's still quite a bit to learn about the organization. Our candidate has been spending all the energy to explain themselves because really it's not proper etiquette to be asking delicate questions during the interviewing process. So now's the time to do that. You want to find out, what's it like to work here?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peter, let's talk about what might happen regarding job duties. Why is it important at this time to clarify job duties? I thought that job duties were those that were posted with the vacancy and they're clear, and that's what all this position is about. Why does the candidate have to discuss that at the time of the offer?
Well, I just remember the one public job vacancy that I applied for and got years ago, because everything else has been private job vacancies and networking with people. But the primary responsibilities sometimes are so many different things, and I think you need to clarify exactly what their expectations are, the position overview, who you're going to be supporting, who you're going to be working for. And, you know, and we've talked about this before, John, is that at best you can do 3 to 5 job duties well based on your gifting and talents. And you need to maybe see what the core of those are, because I just remember my first one when I interviewed in the university setting back in 1980. Oh, my goodness, it was like they had, you know, public job position and primary responsibilities that looked like it was 3 people.
Yes, and in addition to that, sometimes if the Human Resource Office posts a vacancy for a manager, that position has changed in the last 3, 4, 5 years since it was typed up in the manual. It's a whole different ballgame. Or there's a new urgent something, a major project that has to be dealt with that just came in, or they have blended 2 positions because of the economy, and so it's both this position and picking up some of the duties there. And so this is really the only time to clarify all that. What you don't want to do is come to work on Monday, oh, by the way, what's this? Oh, didn't I tell you? And that changes everything. That's a huge issue. Now, Peter, let's talk about this delicate issue of compensation. The person was expecting a certain figure, and the figure they're given is, let's make it real simple. There's $10,000 a year less than what they were expecting. Now what?
Well, obviously you should do your own research to find out what the compensation is for a position like that, and maybe more of a range. And you can, I guess you can do that on Google just as much as any other place. But ask the understanding, you had understood this, and here it looks like this. But there's also other cafeteria style that's available to you for compensation. And some of it, everybody thinks about healthcare, but the one I'm coaching right now is the reason why she's really interested in this is that the tuition remission in the higher education, after you've worked there a number of years, and she's got two girls ready to go into college in about 4 or 5 years. So that's a piece of compensation.
That's a huge issue. Mm-hmm. Where if that benefit wasn't available, the parent would have to be paying for that college out of their pocket.
Right.
Well, let's dive into the compensation issue just for a minute. Mm-hmm. First of all, the thing not to do is to raise an eyebrow or to complain when the offer is made,
mm-hmm.
Because there are too many other things going on. And so the time to address your dissatisfaction with the compensation package is during that phone call after the offer is made, before you accept. And all you say is, you go through all the positive things and you say, now you had mentioned in the compensation that the position pays $85,000 a year. According to my research, I was expecting something closer to $95,000. Is there any flexibility there? And that's about as far as you want to take it. And doing it on the phone is less confrontational. This is something most people don't like to do, and you don't have to do it face-to-face. Over the phone is a little softer. And that's all you have to ask. Is there some flexibility? And then when you have the meeting, you just come back to it and say, now, compensation, you and I talked on the phone. Is there some flexibility in the amounts that you had represented to me? And you do not have to make the decision on the spot whether you're going to accept whatever they say. You can say, well, I was hoping for 95 or better. I guess I should take some time to think on this. Can we get back together and talk? I remember one situation where an individual came to me and he said, I need job search coaching, but I already have an offer. 3 months later, we were able to keep that offer by continuing to negotiate, and the hope was that the employer would loosen up on some impossible expectations. They were just totally unreasonable. And unfortunately, he liked the company, he liked the job, but the expectations were just unreasonable.
Yeah.
So waiting a couple weeks to finalize an offer is certainly acceptable. There's absolutely nothing wrong on that. Now, you mentioned a cafeteria style, Peter. In addition to just the salary that you are awarded, there are other things that can improve the financial advantage of the position. There can be bonuses. And so these would be suggestions that the candidate would make in case the employer is locked in. Well, your position is classified as a class two, and to compensate you at that amount would be a class three, and your qualification is class three. But you know, after you've been here a couple of years, then you would qualify. So we'll pick this up after the break.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing a post-retirement career to give back, to give meaning and purpose. John, in our last break, you suggested that the idea of a career being something bigger than a paycheck is a worthy thought for a boomer, but also for a 30-something career seeker.
That's right, Evan. We can truly choose a post-retirement career as well as an occupation which provides sufficient income, stability, vacation perks, and still make a difference. And that's because our team has a working knowledge of over 90,000 careers, and many of those fit that description. Well, John, why wouldn't everyone want meaning and purpose?
Well, unfortunately, many of us have not considered that final layer of preference for our retirement or our present work life. We kind of get caught up in the trap of staying employed and reading all the How to Succeed, Move Up the Ladder books and blogs. Many of those helps are valid, but they may not be the best for everyone.
Well, John, for the next break, could you give us some examples of the difference between grinding out a job and finding a career which provides meaning and purpose, even for someone like a boomer?
Sure, let's do it.
Thanks, John. If you just turned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDEC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
We're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic today is before you accept the job offer, and to help me with this topic is my co-host, career advancement expert Peter DePauli out of Sherwood, Oregon. And Peter is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. You can see Peter's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Peter, just before the break, we were talking about alternative ways to be compensated if the employer is locked in to a certain area. And you and I know, have coached individuals that have received offers from government agencies. If anyone is locked in to a certain dollar amount for compensation, it's certainly got to be government agencies. And there's always a way. There's always a way to work through it. So here's some alternative possibilities that will, in the end, mean additional dollars. The company can provide paid life insurance as an extra benefit. The company can pay for professional memberships, including the travel and accommodations to one or more professional membership annual conferences. A big favorite is to extend vacation and personal days. If the individual has to relocate, even if it's just across town, the company can pick up the tab on those relocation expenses. That's something outside of the compensation of salary. We also have Christmas bonuses, or just bonuses in general. A favorite that has really worked is deferred compensation, which means that at the end of the first year, the individual receives an extra sum because of their accomplishments, and that extra sum takes them to that level that they were hoping for. There are many of these different kinds of benefits, even something as simple as a health club. If you're frequent at a health club, you are paying health club fees. The company receives benefit if you do that, so that's something they could pay for. Maybe they don't have a retirement package and or a pension plan, and that's something that they could set aside in your particular area. And if the company has products that you feel is something that you would like, maybe they could give you an extra discount. So these are all just ideas that help give alternatives. And if you're trying to coach that employer to coax the employer to ease up a little bit on the financial, it's really the burden's on you to come up with alternatives. They're not going to be that creative. Peter, any special stories or additions to this whole sticky issue of they didn't offer me enough pay?
Well, I'm working with somebody right now that we're trying to get the CEO to look at him not as a sales rep but as a senior level manager, and if he was to talk about training the sales force and how much time it takes to train the sales reps, what would be his bonus or special commission for their work and for his training that they would do?
Sales positions, yeah, the sales positions are very nice for that. Yeah.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
And then, like you said, I mean, my whole thing that I've always done is you know, like we talked about the educational reimbursement. I mean, that's you could double or triple your salary by just having that available if you have kids going through school, or if you want to go back and get or finish your bachelor's degree or go for a master's degree. You have not because you ask not. And a lot of times I think people think, well, you know, in this economy, I should be grateful for what I got. Ask if it's something that really is important to you. Bring it out. Now, you don't have to be a rock star and say, you know, I want to stay at this place and I want to have this kind of stuff. But in line with what you're asked to do and for what the organization's position and job title is calling for.
Yeah, it's not going to be egg on anybody's face by politely asking, and then you have a decision to make.
Right.
Now, before we turn to our job seeker questions, there is one last technicality that our listener may not be aware of. So this whole negotiating process goes well, and the manager or the executive just blows the candidate out of the water with a more than generous counter offer of meeting their $10,000 a year additional and more vacation and on and on and on. It is just incredible. And our listener is just, you can't believe it. Well, there is one little hitch. In larger companies where there is a human resource office, so if the company has a full-time or even part-time human resource office, a person, usually that individual is the referee on the salary levels awarded to each position and the benefits of vacation and time off and sick leave and so on. Managers are not allowed to individually negotiate that. And one of the horror stories for companies is where a manager cuts a deal with a new hire. The new understanding all that gets started and later finds out that the manager did not have the authority to award those benefits. So it's a smart thing if there is a human resource office, before accepting the offer, to just drop by there and say, I'm looking forward to starting next week, and I just need to be clear. We've made some adjustments on my offer, and I just want to make sure that those fit within the human resource schedule and priorities. Do you see any problems here? And get that all cleaned up, because the last thing you want to do is start the job and then find out that, and you won't find out right away. It might be something that's in discussion, and 90 days later, you get the news that, no, you can't get paid that amount. Well, everybody's going to be sore about that.
Right.
And
John, you bring up a good point with the 90 days. You know, most positions have a 90-day probation period, and they're looking at you and you're looking at them, and there's some understanding that if things are not working out in 90 days, they can let you go.
Yes. Now, legally, they should state that, but it's smart to sort of be looking for that. There's nothing wrong if an organization has that. Peter, you and I have trained and taught and coached organizations, and we highly recommend when they're screening candidates to have that 90-day trial period, because you can make a few slip-ups in employment screening, and the 90-day is kind of your fail-safe. And I mean, the candidate would have to really do something dumb to not make it through that 90 days. It's not like something's hanging over you. But you do want to be on your best behavior and make sure that you exceed expectations during that 90 days.
And to complete that cycle, John, hold on, one thing. To complete the cycle, the HR people are the ones who are responsible to know what the legal ramifications are. So you come back around and you make sure on that particular topic there from HR, do they have a 90-day trial period?
Yes, and that and human resource usually has more clout and authority on things like that than the actual manager or executive.
Right.
Because that is their job. They are to maintain the personnel policies and procedures so that the company doesn't get in hot water by doing something that is illegal or out of school that would get them in trouble. Well, Peter, we got some job seeker questions. Why don't you give us one to get started here so that we can help somebody with their dilemma?
Well, John, this goes right along with what we were talking about. Carolyn in Washington, this is what she says. I got a new job 6 months ago. My new boss and I are not getting along. Should I stay or start looking? It took me a long time to get this job.
Hmm. Well,
kind of what we were talking about.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hear some pain in here. It took me a long time to get this job.
Mm-hmm.
Which means either Carolyn was looking a long time, or the process of being interviewed and being selected as a finalist and so on took a long time. This does bring up something that I forgot to mention earlier in our broadcast. Sometimes the boss that hires you gets promoted and you get a new boss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very possible that the boss that hired Carolyn, she liked, but now somebody new has been brought in.
Right.
Well, I'm going to take a shot at this, Peter, and I don't know that there's any right or wrong. I'll start talking. That gives you more time to think about a good answer. But my counsel to Carolyn is you've got to stick with this job and go back and blow off some dust of the previous contacts you made and just come very clean with them and say, several months ago, you know, you and I had talked and I was in a job search mode and I thought I had found the dream job of my life. Well, unfortunately, some things have happened and I'm afraid that it's going to turn out to be a very difficult position. Can we pick up where we left off last? Now, this is much more doable if Carolyn has personal contacts where she has pursued the hidden jobs, where she's actually doing research on opportunities that are in the process of maturing to where a full-time position is going to evolve. But most of the time, if there were just posted vacancies, usually those get filled rather quickly, a couple months, and the good ones go pretty fast. So that would be my counsel, is to hang in there and get back and aggressive in resuming the job search. What are your thoughts, Peter?
Well, I'd agree. It just depends on if she really was looking forward to.
Whoops. We got a break here, Peter. That gives us more time to think. Let's pick it up after the break.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley how one can choose to find meaning and purpose in a post-retirement career as well as a new 30-something job. John, you started this discussion saying that boomers are now free to choose to pursue something fulfilling, to give back.
That's right, Evan.
And then I ask, why can't a 30-something person make that choice? And you said they could. They just had to be intentional to add that third layer of purpose rather than just the paycheck. So here's my question. Can you give us an example of someone who has done this?
Well, Evan, I recall a client who worked for the same employer for 35 years as a director of quality control and manufacturing. there was a change in management and our client was transitioned out. As he and I began to discuss his next chapter in life, I challenged him to think about pursuing something that felt like he was making a difference, something meaningful to him.
So this was a real person?
Yes, it was a real person. Let's call him Phil. He had 1 year of community college and felt like his life wouldn't really amount to much. All he thought he could do was find a similar job and then after a few more years retire, buy a big motorhome, and drive coast to coast.
I've seen a few of those.
Well, as we began to explore Phil's aptitude assessment results, he pointed to a couple of the printout options and said, "You know, I always wanted to do something for troubled kids, for teenagers."
So what happened?
A long story short, he got hired by a county government agency to administrate the placement of foster teens in good homes.
Did he have some prior experience to get that?
Not at all. We helped him plan a strategy after he met the person who had his job.
You mean he first looked at several careers you suggested, then chose this one because of the on-site validation visit?
That's right. And in his job search, he bypassed many who had four-year college degrees and even graduate school degrees. And you know, Phil had only 1 year of community college with no prior experience.
Well, I think I'm speaking for our listening audience when I say that this is a great example, and I wish we had time to find out how you helped him do it.
Yes, that's true, Evan, but then that is what these job seeker broadcasts are all about. I am sharing the same things I taught Phil, all these lessons learned, and he did it, and it worked for him.
John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Well, thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference preferred counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. We're at that portion of our show where we're answering questions sent to us by job seekers, and to help me discuss these questions, I'm joined by a special guest and career advancement and job search expert, Peter DePauli, out of Sherwood, Oregon. And I'm delighted to say Peter is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And you can see Peter's picture and bio. Just click preferred counselors on our toolbar. Peter, we were talking about Carolyn in Washington and this new job 6 months ago into the job, and she and her new boss are not getting along. I think you and I are in agreement on this because both of us have had some time to think on this during the break. We're in agreement not to straighten out the new boss, not to argue with the new boss, not to try and finagle something. The most important thing is to keep the job, keep income coming in, do the best possible to meet the job expectations, but get very aggressive in resuming the job search. Anything more on this that's come to your mind, Peter, since the break?
Well, I just looked again at this and I said, it took me a long time to get this job, so we don't know if that means this is like my dream job, and now I have this boss that I can't get along with or whatever. I've also encouraged people, you know, stay through. You know, you can always attempt to maybe have a sit down, and if necessary, if it really done everything you could and it's just not going anywhere, HR is there for these types of situations, for such times as these. And so sometimes you need to bring HR in and just say, this is just something not working. And they, you know, they're trained in looking at the whole picture, the whole, you know, the corporate culture, and trying to work some of these things out. So it could be that you call upon them to help.
Yeah, and I had totally forgotten that, Peter. I was almost jumping to the conclusion that this was a small organization and this was a senior vice president type of position, and he or she was not, well, she, in this case, Carolyn's not getting along. But you're absolutely right. That is the role of HR. Now, we have to be careful because there's a lot more credibility in Carolyn's boss than there is in Carolyn. She's only been there 6 months. So we want to make sure that Carolyn isn't appearing to be a problem employee by only 6 months and she's already complaining about something.
Right.
We're assuming that if Carolyn took the time to contact us, that she has exhausted her resources and thoughts and ideas. She's probably talked to a few people, maybe even talked to some colleagues, and this thing's getting unbearable, especially because it took her so long to get the position. So maybe the conflict arose in the first 2 months. Who knows? So we just have to be delicate, and the point is the fine line. Do whatever you can to keep the job and try the best you can to be amiable and accommodating, but get really aggressive in the job search. With your lack of seniority, you don't have much leverage in trying to get the boss to clean up his or her act. It's a sad situation. How about another job seeker question, Peter?
Okay, this is from Michael in Portland, Oregon. I'm a college senior majoring in business. I could have a job in my father's business, but I'm not sure if that's what I want to do. Will be working for my father's software consulting business limit my future career opportunities?
Ah, well, in today's situation, I would say unless working for the father's business is totally distasteful, if there's not a good relationship between father and son, I would coach Michael to jump at it. At least Michael now has income where he can pay off his student debts. It's a different situation if Michael had another offer somewhere else. And my hunch, knowing a lot of today's college students, they don't have a lot of offers at the point when they're graduating.
Right.
So it's nice that Michael has an opportunity with the father's business. I think ethically it would be advisable that Michael have a talk with Dad to discuss the future, where things could go if he's with the company. And certainly if Michael does take a position in the firm, he does owe at least 2 years. But frankly, the first job right out of college, especially a family business, I don't think that's going to stereotype him too badly, especially it's a family-owned business and he's going to work to help out the family. What do you think, Peter?
Well, especially because it's a business consulting firm, he may and probably will make other networking contacts with other businesses during his two-year tenure. You're right. You should have at least given 2 years. And, John, sometimes the son needs to step into a different role so that the father sees him not as this little boy growing up in the home, but now sees him as a professional, and maybe the relationship will change if it's more the father-son kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but I like your angle. It's a consulting business. That means it consults with different kinds of companies. And so Michael could, get to know some of the customers, the clients of the business, as future potential employers, and maybe even negotiate some kind of a field experience possibility. I think that's those are good words. Yeah. Okay. How about another one, Peter?
Well, we've got David in Portland. He says, "I'm considering a career change from minister to hospital chaplain. How can I find all of the job opportunities available for this field?"
So, do you think David is looking for a website that posts chaplaincy vacancies?
It seems like that, or maybe he's, you know, being a minister, he's really enjoyed the hospital visitation part of that with the congregants, and maybe wants to go in there and look. I just know from my experience on hospital chaplaincy, there's some really specific areas of training that they want you to do and be certified by, like, a national board of hospital chaplains and such like that.
Yes.
And, of course, you've got the individual hospitals, whether they're nonprofit or faith-based, or if they're a big conglomerate out of Texas kind of thing. So,
yes, well, certainly there are certification standards. It seemed to me that, well, you know, maybe we're reading between the lines, but it seemed to me that David wants the vacancy notices. He's not as concerned about the certification. I don't know of any place where there's one website that only posts vacancies for chaplaincy. The only place I would imagine would be like the National Association of Chaplaincy Certification Training Institute of America, something like that.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, that's it. Well, Peter, we're out of time. Thank you for a great show today.
Okay, John, always a pleasure.
And so that brings to a close our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group, and he's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. In addition to counseling mid-career men and women, John has authored 4 career advancement books. The IDAC Group has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide, and John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. He's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he features as preferred counselors on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They are not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they have not paid any fee to be featured on this broadcast nor on IDAC's website. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I encourage you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.